right. That is Down to the Bone, and we are down to the bone here with the Art Matters show, which is brought to you in part by the Alaska Art Confluence, aiming to inspire a culture of collaboration by supporting artists and arts for the residents and visitors of the Chilkat Valley. On Main Street in Haines and online at alaskaartsconfluence.org. And I'm here, we have Heather.
Yes, I am your host once again,
you
Heather Lendy, and Joni is running the spaceship KHNS Enterprise board. And I do want to say that the views expressed on this program don't necessarily reflect the views of KHNS, Wind Canal Broadcasting, or its board of directors.
Or underwriters. There you go.
So, and we have another one. First Friday is upon us, which means it's going to be Friday, February 1st tomorrow. I mean, January flew.
January was like the longest month ever,
I felt
think.
Like it flew to me. Did it fly for you? And our guest this morning, too, I will say, Christy Fowler is here. She's going to be talking about poems and songwriting and love poems in particular and love songs since February is that month, right? And Deborah Schnabel will be joining us to talk about a little bit about the art of travel. She's just returned from a trip to Ethiopia and also just a little bit of some of her observations of that country. And Colleen Adams is going to be here at closer to quarter to 11 or so and be talking about the Arts Confluence and the Inside Out series of workshops that are beginning on Saturday is the first one. And they'll be running through, I think, through Mother's Day. So there's an opportunity for kind of adult art classes happening. And we'll be running down some of the First Friday events here in Haines and in Clockwan. But wow, let's get started, Christy. Do you you were just nodding that you thought January went by quickly, as well as I did. Do you think that January is a good month for creative people? I mean, is it a good kind of a month, these winter months, January, February, to write poems or songs?
Well, if you're in business, January is not a good month for writing songs because it's all about getting all your end of the year tax information ready. So that's where I'm at. So I just really like to get through January and get to a little bit of time in February, hopefully.
And so, yeah, so when's your month? When's your most creative month?
October.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. That's when we have a little money from the summer. We're able to take a little time off and go to our cabin, but that actually is pretty rare. But when we get up there, then I can really write.
Okay, so now I need to back up here because we need to make sure that you can introduce yourself to anybody who might not know, or also the way that you would like to be introduced for the purposes of the program.
Well, my name is...
Go ahead.
Christy Tangs Fowler. I grew up here. I've been writing poems and songs since I was a little kid. I sang a song that I wrote in fourth grade on TV in Juno on Vern Metcalf's show, a love song. What a time to leave, what a time to leave. He left on Christmas Eve, what a time to leave.
Anyway. Oh, my goodness. That sounds sad.
Really?
It was a real tearjerker, yeah.
How old were you when you did this?
I was, how old are you in fourth grade? I was what?
About 10, 11.
9?
Yeah.
I was 9.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Okay.
So, anyway, I've been writing poems and songs ever since I graduated from Berklee College of Music in 1983. And I had wanted to go into a career as a songwriter, but I came home. And I'm glad that I did. I'm running our family business, the Pioneer Bar and Bamboo Room Restaurant, with my husband, Bob.
So I guess my first question for you is, what's the difference between a poem and a song? Or is there one? I know that Guy Clark is one of my favorite singer-songwriters that died, I guess, about a year ago now, maybe two. Time flies. But he used to say that he was a poet. He wasn't a songwriter, and that they just... You know, the poems became songs. Is there a difference in your mind when you're writing one or the other?
Well, I mostly approach it from the from a poem. I usually write what I'm feeling first, and then the music comes later. But sometimes the music will come, and I'll just put something to it.
Well, when you're writing a poem, what are the things that you're looking for? I mean, is it the rhythm? Is it the sound? Is it the feeling? What starts it?
Well, I've changed it up a little bit lately. I've actually been doing a little bit of rapping.
Yeah.
And so nice. I'm doing like old mama raps now uh-huh. about my life. And so that's an entirely different thing. But usually it's still about just getting your feelings out and just whatever, wherever you're at, just get it out. Mm-hmm. And the more you can allow whatever is there to just come out without censoring it, the better it turns out.
So do you want to play one and we can listen to it and then you can talk about the process?
Okay.
I know that Joni's got, you've brought a CD here and maybe explain a little about what we're going to hear maybe.
Okay, well, this first one is a song from my heart to my husband. It's called You Hold My Heart in Your Hands. And it was, I guess all couples struggle at some time or another. And it was about 10 years ago. And I wrote this song to him. I wrote it in about 3 hours.
And now, who's singing or who's playing?
The woman singing is named Janelle Mosser. I recorded it when I was in Nashville in mm-hmm. 2010.
I recognize that name. She's made other recordings.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Here it goes.
Lovely.
Thank Lovely.
So can you describe your writing process? What you do to come up with that song?
Oh, well,
I mean, do you go to the same place every day? Do you go to a desk? Do you use a laptop?
Oh, okay.
Do you use a pen and a piece of paper?
Okay, I write best at my computer. I just find that I can type faster than I can write, and I actually am not, I don't have very neat hand or penmanship.
That's me too. I'm right there.
So usually I write every day, and I just write from my heart, whatever I'm feeling, try to get it out. And then I just naturally write in rhymes. I can't help myself. It just comes out that way. And so then I find things that click, and if there's usually some kind of rhythm to it. And then I have a list of my favorite music that I like to listen to and get ideas from that. And so I didn't know when I first went back to Berkeley, I didn't realize that I could write my own music. I collaborated with a lot of people back there, because I'm really mostly, I consider myself a lyricist. Mm-hmm. And so
I was going to ask you, so you write the tune as well, the music?
Yes, I write the music too. But so originally I was collaborating with a lot of people writing the lyrics, because when I went to school there were some excellent musicians, but not many of them did well in English. So I was in hot pursuit.
So a question for you is, how many hours a day do you write on a given day?
It was just not that much time in my day, and especially when my kids were growing up, there was a 20-year gap there. Mm-hmm. So I'm writing more now when I can, so it might be a half an hour.
So sit down, and then if something like a line jumps out when you're sitting there, then do you kind of go back and get a little bit obsessed and keep going for hours until you're done with it?
What's the most fun for me is I have this incredible program, Master Writer. And I've got all these files with all these different song ideas, and I bounce around in there, and it's just fun to go to ones I forgot about, and I just look at it with a new light, just let it roll, whatever's there.
Now, you say that you think in rhymes. Does that come from, when you were a little kid, did somebody read you Mother Goose rhymes, or... Dr. Seuss, or,
my mom was a school teacher. That might have had something to do with it. She came up in 1953 to teach school here. And she was always really good with kids, so we did read a lot of Mother Goose. Maybe.
Well, and that's
and
that's
Seuss.
Iambic pentameter. I mean,
yeah,
that's over and over again. The end of those,
too
wet to go out, too cold to play ball, so we sat in the house
and
did nothing at all.
That's pretty much how I think.
Well, and you're not alone in this. I was just reading Mary Oliver, who died last week, I guess it was now, or 2 weeks ago, great poet that I'm a fan of. And I have her book on writing poetry. And she says that we naturally gravitate to rhyme, and that raising children on Mother Goose and on those rhymes is why it's iambic pentameter. So when people say, well, I can't write poetry, it's like, no, yes, you can. You the alphabet song is poetry. These are rhythms that are ingrained in us from a very young age if we pay attention to it. And it sounds like you've still held on to that.
Yes, I think that might have something to do with it.
Do you think a song has to rhyme versus where a poem can be more free verse?
I think a song feels better when it rhymes. And it doesn't have to be a perfect rhyme as long as it lands on the same vowel. Especially a heartfelt song like country songs, they kind of stretch it a little bit with the perfect rhymes, but it still feels okay. But it just feels good when something rhymes.
When you write a song like that one, that's really personal, do you think, are you ever afraid of sharing that much of, your heart?
Yes, I am. But at the same time, I want to be honest in my songs. I want to be honest in what I say, and I think that's really important.
Do the people around you ever not like that?
Well, I guess it depends on if a song who I'm putting in my song. That could be. I don't know. Not so far though.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that sometimes the songs that you write, just like that one that we heard, that is so particular and so personal to one couple, because you are honest about it, it touches people or strikes a chord more than if you were a little more vague or general?
Yeah, that's what I found. If you're really writing from your own heart, you know, I think a lot of people can actually relate to or have gone through the same thing you have. So hopefully that's the case.
What is the writing of those songs or poems, the verses and putting it all together, what does that do for you personally?
Gets crap out. I mean, there's a lot of things that build up in a person, and it's very therapeutic, actually, to get it out that way. And so that's actually, writing songs has been my therapy, and hence that's my interest in writing Dr. Phil songs. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the other thing I do, so, which is the next one.
Okay, shall we hear one? We'll hear another one. We've got, and then... yeah, and then maybe we can, after we hear this one, you can give those of us some tips that might want to write a poem to a sweetheart or a friend, or maybe
number
even try
three.
To sing it.
Okay, this is a song that I wrote based on the Dr. Phil saying, "It takes 1,000 attaboys to replace one you're not good enough." Hmm. So this is a love song to your kids.
And who's singing this one?
This song is sung by Justin Waylon Spears, and he sang on a few of my songs when I went to Nashville in 2010, and I just found him on Facebook and asked if he would be interested in doing any demos because I had the money from the Rasmussen grant.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally wrote back and said yes, and I just got this like 2 months ago.
Oh, nice.
And I'm very happy with it.
Okay.
No, this one I just got a few days ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, soon as Dad got home, he turned the TV on, or get tied up on the phone. He never caught a single game, and never saw me play. Wasn't in the bleachers, I never heard him say. Attaboy, that's the way. You can do it, yes you can. Attaboy, great to see you grow into a man. I'll be here when you need me. You're my pride and joy. Go get 'em, Tiger. Way to go. Well done, son. Attaboy. Across the road, I'd see Jimmy working with his dad. Heard the way they talked, saw the fun they had, playing catch, shooting hoops, fixing that old Chevrolet. His dad would hand him tools, and I would hear him say, attaboy, that's the way. You can do it, yes you can. Attaboy, great to see you grow into a man. I'll be here when you need me. You're my pride and joy. Go get 'em, Tiger. Way to go. Well done, son. Attaboy. Some time to learn what's important in my life. Ain't a fancy job or house, it's my children and my wife. Now when my little guy steps up to bat and swings away, hit or miss, he knows he's gonna hear me say, "Atta boy, that's the way. You can do it, yes you can. Atta boy, I will help you grow into a man. I'll be here when you need me. You're my pride and joy. Go get 'em, Tiger. Way to go. Well done, son. Head up, boy. Go get 'em, Tiger. Way to go. Well done, son.
Half an hour, so we
head up,
boy." Wow.
Yeah. I know.
Time goes fast.
I know. A half an hour flew by. That was, attaboy, that's nice. It sounds so country. Like, I'm like, why isn't that like a hit, Christy? These songs, like that song, for instance, that's part of your Dr. Phil project, and there's a documentary, and so you're waiting until that is complete before these.
I feel like my best chance to get to Dr. Phil is the documentary, so I'm waiting and I'm just writing, but I'm writing more songs. I'm happy with the new songs.
Right,
I'm
and for those stuff. People who might be unfamiliar with your work, you've been writing these songs based on Dr. Phil's sayings for a while and trying to get to Dr. Phil so he can hear them and get them out in the world and give you permission, essentially, to use his...
Well, no, what I'd like to do is have him as the co-writer, co-publisher, and then put the songs out with his music. Country music.
Well, I hope that works for you.
That's the hope.
I hope it does. So. It should, you know? So now tell us quick, because we've got Deborah and Colleen in the wings here, and a half an hour has just flown by. Give us a few pointers on writing a love poem or for somebody that we might want to give something to in a little Valentine.
The most important thing is to just speak from your heart, and life works when it comes from your heart.
So just sort of make it like a little note, and think of it maybe with a rhyme mixed up in it.
Yes. Go back to Dr. Seuss, if you need to.
Do you want to read? You have one, right? Read us one, and then we'll...
This was my love poem to my husband I gave him
okay.
for Valentine's Day a few years ago. Sometimes it's really hard. This is Bob's song. I'm making it into a song, too. Sometimes it's really hard. I want to cut bait and run. Sometimes you're so serious, it ain't much fun. Sometimes I look at us and I don't know who we are. What do we have in common besides running this old bar? But then with just one glance, the doubts all melt away. My heart jumps. I get goosebumps. I'm in love with you today. We lie in bed and talk about replacing leaky pipes and how that Chevy in the junkyard would look good with racing stripes. You've got your own cologne, a bouquet of beer and bacon grease. I wonder how I got here, but then wonders never cease. 'Cause it only takes a glance, the doubts all melt away. My heart jumps, I get goosebumps. I'm in love with you today. And when I crawl in bed at night, I cuddle up to my best friend. With every snore, I love you more, and I'd marry you again.
Well, thank you, Christy. Thanks very much for sharing this with us today.
And thank you.
Keep us updated on the Dr. Phil project and the documentary.
I will. Thank you so much.
Okay. Right, hey, you're welcome.
Thank you. We'll be back with who?
Deborah Schnabel.
Deborah Schnabel's coming in. All right, a little music.
And she's not wearing her borough hat at all. She's wearing her artsy traveler
right
cap.
On.
Deborah Schnabel. Deborah, introduce yourself
Hi, I'm
for
Deborah
someone
Schnabel.
That might not be familiar with you.
Well, I was invited to come to the show. I forgot the name of it. Would you read my name?
Lynn Cannell, Art Matters.
Art Matters. And on my way over today, I was thinking, why am I being invited to this show? I couldn't figure that out. And Heather, you told me it's because for some reason you think that I know something about the art of traveling.
Yes. I mean Ethiopia, Morocco, you take these.
Two places.
Not Bali, Hong Kong. You take these big trips.
I was invited to Bali. That wasn't a place that I thought to go to. But I have thought to go to Barrow, Alaska, which is
right.
Now Upyatvik. And I've gone to China and Africa, would be both Morocco and Ethiopia, which it captures the imagination, apparently, because you've invited me here
yes.
to talk about it.
Well, in your slideshow, I think you travel with a discerning eye, I think. You're not, I mean, there's, yes, maybe tell me what you think the difference is between travel and a vacation.
Oh, wow. Well, I always think of it as a vacation because in fact, this year when I decided that I wanted to go to Ethiopia, I was truly at a place in my mind and body where I knew I needed to get out of where I was.
Mm-hmm. Get out of town?
Yeah. I could feel that I was short-tempered. I could sense that I was not, you know, focused. I couldn't hold my attention as long as I should on problem solving. And so I thought, wow, I better take my own advice, because I always tell my staff, take your vacation. Mm-hmm. And so my decisions to go places, I'm not a research person. I usually something just will capture my attention about what the destination might be. And in this case, it really did have to do with about 3 or 4 months of this bath wash I bought from Mountain Market. It was from Abyssinia. It was Abyssinia, you know, bath wash. And I kept thinking, Abyssinia, what? I think that's Ethiopia. And then Queen of Sheba came to mind, and all this stuff, I just flooded with this idea that I needed to go find out what that was all about. Mm-hmm. And so I called my friend Sharon, who is a very good traveler. We are good traveling companions. She's so detail-oriented, and I am not.
So that helps to team up with somebody, you know, that one of you does. But I did that. I traveled with my daughter, JJ, and she's all about the bookings, and I'm all about enjoying a lovely meal and going to the opera.
Exactly.
And so she gets us on the trains.
Right. In my youth, I did travel much more spontaneously, and truly it was not as rewarding in terms of travel, because I did spend an awful lot of time just taking care of, you know, where I was going to go next, and not knowing the travel systems and the you know, how to get places. So to have somebody, to have that taken care of is good. So a difference between a vacation, I think a lot of times people are too short with their vacations, and because especially in Alaska, you have to allow at least, you know, a week, 5 days, 5 to 7 days, you have to allow for you getting where you need to go and getting acclimated to where you are, so that you can truly enjoy the place you are in. And I think that's important, to make sure that you're not always on the go. Mm-hmm. And so I do make little rules for myself, which is one of them is I would always stay at least one night in a place, never just travel through it. And I suppose for some who are listening now, it'd be like, one night, Deborah, it has to be a week, it has to be a month. And that's true. You know, now that I look back on my trip to Ethiopia, I could have stayed in Addis Ababa for the whole 3 weeks, you know, but that wasn't the trip that we had planned. So the vacationing, and I think if somebody said, Deborah, you have to take a vacation, I would probably think of doing nothing, like going to a destination and
like a beach in
a
Mexico.
Beach,
right.
Exactly. And not having to concern myself about any of the local issues. But my trip to Ethiopia and also my trip to Morocco was more about an exploration of something that I had never thought of before. I never grew up thinking about what it would be like to ride a camel, but that was the impetus for going to Morocco, was that I thought, I think I want to be on a camel before I die, you know? And so that took me to Morocco, which then opened up the door to so many more other things that I learned about Morocco, but it was usually just that, it was that one thing. Just like this trip to Ethiopia was, I wanted to learn more about the Queen of Sheba. And I learned about a whole lot more than the Queen of Sheba when I was in Ethiopia. But
was there some, do you find after sort of immersing yourself, albeit briefly, 3 weeks
briefly,
or whatever
yeah,
it
sure.
is, you know, you can't leave a place and be an expert anymore. No. People can come and go from Haines or Skagway or Kluckwan and suddenly know everything. So much is based on who you meet and your experience and the weather that week or whatever. Mm-hmm. But was there something sort of fundamental that you could take away from that maybe that changed you or your view of the world?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the most important thing about travel is if you want to know about the about the country, it's about the people. I mean, it's true, geography makes country, politics makes country, but people also make country. And that's, I think, the most important thing. We traveled in Ethiopia and met people that our guides were with us all the time. And we insisted that we do that we travel the way they lived. Mm-hmm. And that was important to us. And just to give you an example, like the first day that we were in a Bahar Dar, the guide and the driver and the accountant person that they brought along, we drove in our van to a hotel restaurant, and we went into the hotel restaurant. And this was for breakfast. And they, the guide and the driver and the accountant, all sat down at the table. And Sharon and I sat down at the table also. And it was a place that obviously had a buffet for breakfast. And we sat and we sat. And I said to Lungo, our guide, well, are we going to get up and have breakfast? He said, oh, no, you have breakfast. I said, what do you mean you have breakfast? Aren't we we don't eat here. I said, well, then we don't eat here either. And we all got up and we left the restaurant. But that was that was the very beginning of the trip. So we set the parameters for our guide that this is not, you know, we want to do what people do that live here. Mm-hmm. Don't imagine.
Take them to the American breakfast restaurant.
Right. And that's what they had done. They assumed that we wanted to eat where, like, the other European tourists were eating. Mm-hmm. And that isn't what I wanted to do. So from then on, we were totally engaged. Even though we went to many tourist places, you know, we ate with their friends, sometimes in their friends' homes, and just traveled around. It was so interesting to me because the our guide, who was really the ranger for the whole trip, knew people in every town. So we connected up in every town with another local person. And we had lots of laughs and we had a really good time and learned about them and their families and their moms and their dads and their cats and their this and that and the other thing. Got involved in their personal lives.
It sounds very kind of privileged to have a guide and a driver, mm-hmm. and you're a very self-sufficient person. Mm-hmm. I mean, what does that add to it? And why have a guide when you go to a place? Do you think that it's a window into the place that is different than you could just sort of find out banging around on your own?
We had a guide in Morocco for the camel trek. But then after the camel trek, we were on our own. But in Ethiopia, we had a guide the whole way. And the difference was for us, I don't know any other way to put it, but it's the economics of the country, the infrastructure. It's in Morocco, we could find a train station. We could get on board. The train left on time. I mean, everything was as I'm used to. In Ethiopia, there's so little infrastructure that it would be hard to accomplish what we needed to accomplish, like go on a trek, for example, mm-hmm. you know, without having somebody in the country knowing how to accomplish that. It's just not that evident because there isn't as much familiarity, you know, within Ethiopia. It's not as connected, I guess, with westernized methodology, I guess, or the infrastructure. But the other thing was we were advised by the guide because when we told the guide we wanted to use public transportation, and when he met us the first day, you know, and he came with his van and his driver, and he said, I know that you want to travel on public transportation, and here's the alternative to take me and the driver, but let me tell you about public transportation. And there's a lot of hassling with the owners and the drivers, you know, that because of, we're fringy, we are obviously tourists, and people will always try to give you a bad time, rip you off, or charge you more, or not be as, even though they're helpful people, I mean, there's always a cost to everything that's that you're involved in. But I think the issue also was just knowing how to make connections, knowing where to land, knowing how to and also just being familiar with the territories. So when he met us, quite honestly, Lungo said to me and Sharon, oh, you're not 40 or younger. And so it was like, he needed to know who, because we would all just been on the internet and nobody said, how old are you? So here are these two, you know, slightly white haired, older ladies, you know, we're fit, we're competent, all the rest of that. But he knew what we were going into. We didn't. And he said, I would really advise you to let us take you in the van. It'll be faster, it'll be easier, you know, and you're not going to be hassled. And that proved, I think, to be true, because eventually we did start taking the public transportation. And they don't even tell you where you're going on a public transportation bus. They just yell it out. And if you don't know that where you want to go is on the way, then you just don't, you know, you don't know what bus to get on. You don't know when to get off. You know, you're sitting in a, and they're little minivans. Like, you know, that's another thing. And I know minivans are built for, you know, what, 15 people? Well, there's like 17 or 18 of us in there, you know.
Well, I mean, I think we know, too, here, you know, in the Upperland Canal, those of us who live here watch tourists come, and they're guided by some of our best and brightest. And I am sure they have a better experience than if the family got off and thought, well, maybe I'll go out to Chilkoot, or maybe I'll try to get to the river and rent a canoe or something. Right. I mean, their experience, even just something as simple as walking on the Battery Point Trail, if you didn't know where you were going and you thought there were bears, but having a local guide talk to you and answer questions.
Who knows that
it really enriches the experience.
Who knows that the Riley Trail is like 4 miles out of town, for example, that sort of thing. But the other thing that I want to say, too, lest you think that we were guided around like the Queen of Sheba.
No, I didn't mean to imply that.
But
you know,
I do want people to
know
we were on a budget tour. We told, you know, Lungo asked us, what, you know, what do you want me to book? Do you want me to book low end, mid, you know, mid range, or high end on the, you know, restaurants and the that where you're going to sleep and the transportation? We said, no, we're budget travelers. We had really nice places, but where would we have been able to find those by ourselves? You know, probably not. So all of that was really good.
And then one more thing I wanted to ask you before Killeen hops in here, but I was intrigued by your insistence, really, that you go to modern art museums and not, you know, typically when people travel, you go to Italy, you want to see the Michelangelo. I didn't think of going to a modern Italian art museum. And you seek these out.
It's a rule that I make for myself when I travel, because it's so easy to get involved in the history of a country and you end up coming home with a lot of little doodads and souvenirs, you know, that are just kind of made by crafts. Well, I hate to say, I don't mean this negatively, but the question is, what are the people who are engaged in the current culture, what are they doing right now? What are they thinking about? Because none of us really think to go to a country and go to the university. We, you know, we go to museums and we go to old sites, and there's tons of UNESCO sites, you know. So you get totally immersed in the long ago places. But you have to, I like to ask myself, so what would I be doing if I was in Morocco, right? If I lived here, if I lived in Ethiopia, what would I be doing? You know, I wouldn't be traveling around looking at, you know, UNESCO sites. Hopefully I would be involved in the current culture. So the easiest thing to do is pick on artists, you know. Artists are usually at the vanguard of a culture. What are they thinking about? What are they trying to communicate? And it's always been a really enriching experience to go into a museum of modern art. And in Ethiopia, by the way, we didn't go to a museum of modern art. They do have one. in Addis Ababa. But we did go to a gallery, mm-hmm. which was almost the same thing.
Yeah.
So that's important, you know, to know when you travel what are local, not just local, but what are people who are moving the culture along, what are they doing now? Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, thank you, Deborah. This is great. It makes me want to go somewhere. And I'm pretty, you know,
mobile,
lead-footed. I don't like to get up and go very far.
I am not a traveler.
I love being at home.
I do too, and it's interesting. A lot of people perceive that I'm a traveler. I travel like on a big trip, maybe every 3 years. Mm-hmm. I'll go somewhere, and I always travel budget. Yeah. The trip to Ethiopia was like less than $4,000, closer to $3,000, mm-hmm. which most of that was the airfare. You know, mm-hmm. so
yeah,
it was a wonderful experience, and I encourage people to travel, you know, wanting to know what's going on in the
country.
And
then the big question, when you got home, were you refreshed and changed and ready to go to work, or you needed a vacation from your vacation?
Oh, I should say this, that the last couple of days, we told Lungo, and this was unplanned, but Ethiopia was very chaotic, you know, it's very chaotic, the cities, and it's just so much input all the time. And we told Lungo, we need to, you know, calm down. And so he found us a nice little resort area that was just south of Addis Ababa by about 50 kilometers. We drove down there. We spent 2 days just kind of being in this really small town in a little hotel that was kind of back in the forest. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really nice. So I came back refreshed, yes.
Well, great. Well, thank you, Deborah,
thank you
very much. Thanks for coming in.
You bet.
Thank
you.
All right. And next, we've got Colleen Adams is coming up. Wow, this is just, there's a lot of stuff happening here today.
There is a lot.
I'm feeling a little behind, but I'm just, the ideas are.
We got this.
I'm thinking about writing a country song. How about you, Joey?
You could do it all over again.
All right, let me get
you do it.
All right.
Colleen Adams is here. And Colleen, will you introduce yourself for people who may not be familiar with you?
Yeah. Well,
or however you want to introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me here. I'm Colleen Adams. I've lived here 4 big years in Haines and moved here from Austin, Texas. So I have enjoyed the beauty and the culture here and have just dove right into the art world.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. You're on several boards, right?
I am.
The museum and what else?
I'm the president
tourism?
Of the Haines Sheldon Museum and then the Art Confluence Board and TAB.
And
oh,
she
wow.
taught art at the high school for a year.
I did teach art for, mm-hmm. elementary through high school, which Miss Danner is amazing mm-hmm. at what she does. I walked into an art room that was completely organized and labeled, and it was fabulous. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a great introduction to this community mm-hmm. and to the kids.
And now tomorrow you're doing, Saturday. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking it's First Friday, but it's the Thursday before First Friday.
Right.
Saturday you're doing part of a series of workshops. You're doing the first one, mm-hmm. and they're called Inside Out.
Inside Out.
Tell us about that.
Inside the art world, bringing it out to the community. I think that's kind of how we look at it. There are many artists in this town, mm-hmm. And it's bringing art to everyone and making it available for them.
So what's the one on Saturday?
Well, the workshop, I was inspired by an art piece that I saw in Austin, actually, but it's an assemblage, however you want to pronounce that. But it's
assemblage, I heard somebody say it. I loved it.
Yeah,
it sounded very...
I kind of say it the Texan way.
Assemblage.
But it's a group, a grouping of things. Uh-huh. But normally, when someone that has studied art, they think of a three-dimensional product. But we said that because it is a grouping. You're going to be working on a canvas. You're going to be working with hand-painted papers that I'm actually hand-painting myself, but also bringing together other art forms, but not three-dimensional. It's all going to be paper. You're going to be applying it with Mod Podge, which has been around forever.
Mod Podge, I remember that stuff, right? Joni, you're an artist. Yeah. Do you use Mod Podge?
Well, not so much, but it's kind of like an Elmer's glue thinned down.
Huh. It's amazing. You can use Mod Podge on surfaces. You can turn a table into a whole different art piece with it. It's very durable.
Can you give a description of Mod Podge? I'm thinking of, Deco Podge, when you put, like, newspapers or something, you make a picture and you put the goop over it. Give a description of something that has Mod Podge.
Well,
Deco Podge does.
Deco Podge does have that. I mean, people can make... Mod Podge is the label. It's the company that put it together. But basically, artists all over the world make it themselves with glue and water.
Mm-hmm.
But what Mod Podge actually though becomes a seal. You can use it as glue, which we will be doing to create your art piece, and then at the end you'll go back over it with Mod Podge to seal it. And to
like a varnish or
like a
shellac
varnish,
or something.
Exactly. Right. They sell it at LuTac.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Bring some home. I can put it on the wall or something. We can have some fun with the Mod Podge.
Actually, it is amazing. It's probably one of my favorite things to get ready for a workshop because you're teaching, you're getting ready, but you want a sample of what you're doing, right? So it's kind of giving me permission to sit down and actually work on a piece. There is hand-painted paper all over the place at our house. I mean,
What do you mean by hand-painted paper?
You
just take a white piece of paper and you paint it blue or red or whatever?
Well, I have a lot of great paper stock. So, fabulous watercolor papers that I'm using. You give it a bath, you put water on it, and then acrylic paint actually turns into like a watercolor, medium. So it blends well and you let that dry. You can put cut tissue paper on top of it and glitter, and it's just,
and then people can cut it up or use
I'm going to have it at big, huge pieces that they can take those pieces and cut it and make it into what they want.
So are these is there any room in this workshop still?
Yes, there is.
And do you have to be an artist?
Absolutely not. Actually, I think we all have our creative spirit inside of us, and that's why I like these workshops. I'm encouraging people to come out. It's beginner level. It is all about, actually, what's cool about this project, there will be paint and brushes available if there's something they want to do, an application they want to put on their piece. But mainly it's about putting together a puzzle. Like, it's really fun to do this with children or adults. So I'm really encouraging moms and daughters. Like, we've even talked about this. If a mother wants to bring their daughter, it'll be just one entry. I mean, it'll be one fee.
Mm-hmm.
It's $40. And those two can work on this piece together. Or a grandmother and their granddaughter. Or
a dad and
or
a son.
Or a dad and a son. And that's what I was going to say. I was going to encourage men. I don't know how many workshops I've had. Maybe 5 or 6. I haven't seen one gentleman, and I encourage them to come to this one because it really, you're going to be working with an X-Acto knife and or scissors, and it's very, you can create your piece with different sizes of hand-painted paper. It's really fun.
What do you think, just the act of creating or getting together and making something like this, I mean, what does that bring to a person?
It brings to a person at the end of the class, every single time it happens, it doesn't matter if we are working on the exact same thing. We'll say a sunset.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that class, there is always different renditions of what the next person is doing. Not one single person does exactly the same thing as the other. And that's the beauty. When I was teaching elementary school art, one of my favorite things to do with the kids, we would all be working, and you'd have 20 kids in the room, right? And they would all be working on their project. And there would be about 10 minutes left of the class. And I would say, okay, it's time for a museum walk. And they'd all know what that meant. They would put their brushes up. They'd clean them. They'd put their materials up. And they would stand up and walk around the room to see what other people have created. They were all working on the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they took that museum walk because they were inspired by each other. And the person that walks in the room and says, I don't even know how to draw a stick figure. And the other person that really pretty much knows they can draw well, and we all know who those people are, they look at each other's art and they're like, wow, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it. I know that person over there in that corner is a good artist. I walked in the room thinking I wasn't, but I am. Because we all have a creative spirit in us. We all do. And that's the beauty of the workshops.
Wow. There you go. And also, I need to make sure that
oh, yes.
I mentioned that the workshops, your workshop and the rest of them, are made possible in part by a generous grant from the Alaska State Council on the Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts.
Absolutely.
I love that we're bringing in. And obviously, that's why the cost isn't as high as you think it might be for how many hours of art instruction in a beautiful place. But the other thing we do need to mention, might draw in some more of the guys, is that it's in the it's at the Chilkat Inlet Retreat, the beautiful timber frame lodge that's made out of all local.
It's fabulous
wood, and just even from the doors to the tables and the chairs, everything is all handcrafted and local and made by a lot of guys and some gals here in Haines, and it's just a neat place to spend a few hours. You'd be inspired just by hanging out in there.
Absolutely. I agree. I'm excited about it. And yeah, you're right. I think the guys would love it. But I do want to mention one thing, if we have time. We have, besides what I'm doing, we have Andrea Nelson is having a talk on art on the remote island of Tu, which is Saturday, February 9th from 2 to 4 at the Haines Sheldon Museum. I also will say that the Haines Sheldon Museum is not going to be a part of First Friday because of an unforeseen event. So we will be having the art opening exhibit
next week.
February 9th at 1.
Great.
And then after that, the talk with Andrea. So yeah, we've got a lot of things going on.
We do. Well, we got to run down here because we're right at the end of our show.
Okay.
Already.
Thank you for having me.
But
well,
thank you very much. Colleen, do you have anything going on at Lynn Canal Mercantile for First Friday?
No.
That's also your personal gallery.
Well,
and
it's
shop.
Hopefully we're working on that.
Okay.
Yeah. We got a lot of things going on. So we'll see you.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you having me.
All right. Thank you, Colleen. And I want to just, you're fine. You can come and go or stay and listen. It's like a living room around here. And we're listening to the wind, by the way. The ferry isn't running.
It's not running tomorrow. Yeah.
And so because of this storm, the windstorm.
60 knots.
Yeah.
60 knots.
But I want to let everybody know also that the Chilkat Kwan Heritage Center will be having Jamie Campbell painting and beading from 1 to 4, and they'll be open tomorrow afternoon. It's supposed to be sunny and cold, beautiful day to drive out the road and spend some time out there. The Loft is going to be having the Lao Tzu Tea Company and tea and chocolate. Dalton City Yarn is going to have a sale and have warm, soft, pre-made sweaters and scarves. Art on Main Street. We've got Cosmo Fudge. We'll be showing his guitars at the Arts Confluence,
awesome.
As well as Naomi Green, a Haines High student and digital artist. So that's pretty neat. Mm. And what else? Oh, at the Gateway Building, the Chilkat Valley Community Foundation, the Haines Chamber of Commerce, and Pro Haines are sponsoring Sweet Sweets.
Right.
They're going to have all the offices and some of the residences open, and there'll be chocolate. Also on loan, Valentine
Hearts.
So that's going to be really pretty neat, too. So, and also the brewery has Andrea Nelson's artwork there, and I'm trying to think if I've...
the bookstore.
At the Magpie, they're going to have bread pudding.
Ooh,
Josie's chocolate bread pudding. The usual suspects will be open, and the theme is sort of chocolate and love because it's Valentine's. And coming up not in the too distant future, is another River Talk, the February River Talk, and they're still looking for storytellers. So don't miss that either. And I'm sure there's a million other things in February, but time to start composing your little love poem.
It's a lovely month for sure.
Oh, Joni. All right. Well, I think we've managed to get through another hour of Art Matters. And again, if you would like to be on the show, if you'd like to make sure that we announce something that you're doing, whether Haynes, Skagway, Klukwan, please let me know, or somebody at KHNS, or someone at the Arts Confluence, and or the Chamber of Commerce in Haynes, and we can get that happening for you. It's not exclusive, and it's not particularly scientific. it's just sort of, hey, this would be a good idea.
It just happens.
So please feel free to ask, and mm-hmm. I'll make sure we get you on here.
All right. Well, thank you so much. It's coming up on 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for World Cafe at 11 o'clock. Thank you so much for tuning in to Art Matters with Heather Lendy and crew. Go on out and make it a great day. You're tuned to KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, and Klukwan.